I felt inspired to be here this morning. It's really great to be amongst a group of people who are exploring faith and work related issues, the theology of work, stuff that's important to me, but it's hard to find conversation partners for whom it's also really important too, and to come to another part of the world and discover, yeah, there's a whole lot of other people who are on this journey too. It's just wonderful from my point of view. What we're intending to do in the next three sessions, this session is developing further what Paul introduced to us in the first session this morning, resources for exploring the theology of work. And Paul's done us a great service by introducing us to a whole bunch of resources in the papers that he has produced. But more than that, I think perhaps more than any other person in this part of through his visits to this part of the world, he's been very influential in terms of promoting the theology of work and the study of the theology of work. And I think there are many of us who owe you a great debt of gratitude, Paul. Thank you very much for that. And also for the fact that you have been so generous with your resources in terms of wanting to make them freely available to other people. That's just grand. And I'd want to follow Paul's example. Anything that I've got that could be of use to you just ask for it. It's yours. So this session here, we're looking at some theology of work resources that might be helpful to you. I'm talking particularly out of my own journey, but after lunch, we're looking at some online resources that have been made freely available through the Theology of Work project. And we'll be introducing you to those. If you have a computer with you and you want to follow us by having a look online after lunch as we explore the Theology of Work website and show you what resources are there, then come prepared for that. And then in a later session after that, then Paul Stevens, myself, and Al Erisman are looking at different models of seminaries delivering theology of work training, both within the formal curriculum and also outside of the formal curriculum of seminaries. And we've been involved in doing the study of a whole variety of seminaries, mainly in the Western world, but which may also have implications for you. As I said last night, I'm from New Zealand. New Zealand's a context that's rapidly changing. By the middle of this century, New Zealand will no longer be a European background nation. New Zealanders of European background will be outnumbered by Maori, Pacifica and Asia background people. And so we find ourselves trying to work out our theology of work, our models of church, and just our approach to understanding the Bible and doing theology in general in a context where intercultural discussions are actually really important to us to find a way forward. And I think Asian Christians have a really important part to play in this. Because you are so active in the world economy. And also because you're so mobile and so present in almost every active marketplace in the world, and both at the top end as business people, but also at the lower ends as blue collar workers, as people who's come as wage workers, as maids, as people involved in service industries in a whole variety of different countries. I hope the marketplace movement is not going to just become an elitist top end of the market kind of movement. It applies to all God's people doing all kinds of work. And your work matters to God no matter what part of the economy you play your part in. And I fear that in the West that a lot of the marketplace movement has become a white collar movement. And a lot of the church is a white collar church in the West too. And that's something that many of us feel disturbed about. But if what we're talking about here impacts at every level of the church's life and has therefore the potential to impact at every level of society's life, then you as Asian Christians have the power to change the world. I think partly it's because you work in a context where there are other strong religions that also are influential in nations, so you understand a lot about living out your faith in pluralistic contexts. Part of it is because you understand a lot about living out your faith in contexts of corruption. Part of it is because you understand a lot about faith and culture because you're the product of cultures that have long histories of their own. But I still think it's also going to depend on whether you can overcome that dualism and the clericalism that so much cripples the church in other parts of the world. And as I hear it today, that's also crippling churches in Asia as well. So there are challenges there that we all have to overcome in this way. But if you can rediscover a sense of kind of whole life discipleship that's lived out in a robust and vigorous way in the marketplace, you can have a powerful influence right around the world. It's very interesting to me to see in North America today how much it is people, younger people from Asian backgrounds, who are changing the face of evangelicalism, even in the United States. This is true in our country too. The church statistics in New Zealand would look much worse if it wasn't for Pacifica and Asian immigrants who are forming such vigorous church lives in New Zealand. As the church has moved from the north to the south, and as it's moved from the west to the east in terms of the centre of gravity of Christianity, I think there are few people who are as well placed as Asian people are, because there are Asian communities in every significant city of the world. You have strong connections. You can have a powerful influence. And particularly, if we can get it right in terms of the kind of issues that we're talking here today. So mostly I've come here because I think I've got an awful lot to learn from you. Not because I really think that I've got a whole lot to teach you. And so it is with a certain degree of self-consciousness and with a lot of humility that I just want to share a few things out of my own journey. To talk about some of the things that have become important to me as I've been thinking through theology of work resourcing over the last 20 years. And maybe there are some reflections out of this that also have relevance for you. So first of all, some formative experiences that have shaped my approach. And so there is a little bit of personal history that I want to put before I just throw at you the whole list of resources that you have been handed out just now. And four particularly formative experiences for me. And you can translate these into your own circumstances.
I put these in the center of these
tables. Right. So I will refer to these later. But these notes don't apply to this. Philip's going to, if there's anything of interest here, Philip will circulate the PowerPoint to you later. But I did, this was never part of my theological education. I came from a family that were involved in business, but in actual fact, I've spent most of my life as a pastor, as a mission leader, and as someone teaching in a seminary myself. This was never part of my theological education, but it's not that no one had ever thought about these issues in the Christian history before, and I decided I wanted to find out what Christians had said and thought about these kind of issues. So I did a thesis initially I used as my excuse for exploring these issues. I was looking at historical developments in the theology of vocation, Christian understandings of vocation from the first century until the 20th century. So the first portion of my thesis, and this thesis is available for anybody who wants it online, you can download it, it's there if you look. But the first portion looks at the history of Christian understandings of vocation, but particularly looks at the origins of kind of the sacred-secular divide as that has impacted on church life in the West. I mean, one of the very interesting things that I'd want to encourage you to think about, and each of you comes from different settings, is what is the history of your own, the origins of the dualism that obviously impacts on each of your own traditions. For some, it seems to come from Confucianism. People have talked about the dualism in that today. other people have said, in Buddhism, there are some examples of the same thing. Monks enjoy a different status than kind of other people. What's the history of Buddhism, that kind of where the clericalism that now impacts on the shape of church in Buddhist context kind of comes from? What's the situation in dominant Muslim context? And how does Islam itself integrate kind of faith and work in its own mentality? Because a lot of people would say, actually, Muslims do this better than most. I don't know if that's true or not. You know in your context better than I do. And in Hinduism, the impact there. So when LT writes on kind of what's a Christian perspective on matter, it comes out of kind of how he's wrestling with some of those things in the Indian context. So each of you, in your own context, can think about these things yourself. For me, it was in the West, I was wanting to understand, where did this divide between Sunday and Monday, between the church leaders and the laity, and between everyday work and kind of spiritual concerns? Where did these divides come from? So the first chapter of my thesis on vocation, the next two chapters deal with Christian understandings of the theology of work that were developed between 1945 and 1998. And it summarises, if you haven't got time to read the books, then I think it's one of this sounds like kind of self-praise. It's not intended to be that way. I just think it's one of the most helpful summaries of all the significant theologies of work written between 1945 and 1998. If you need to get up to speed quickly, you can do it in two chapters by reading those chapters of the thesis. The next chapter deals with the theology of mission and ministry as it relates to that. And the last chapter deals with what are the implications of these for the shape of church life, and how do we develop church life that more significantly helps to bridge the gap between Sunday and Monday. That was very important to me. The Faith at Work survey followed on from that, because a number of friends of mine who were business people in the marketplace said, "And yeah, Alistair, are you ever going to bring this stuff down to earth and see what it looks like in reality?" And I said, "You guys are the practitioners, you can do that." And they said, "Yeah, but we need some help." And I said, "Well, I'd love to help, but that would take time and it would take money." And so basically, the way that businessmen often do, they said, "If we put up the money, would you make the time?" And so for 2 years, I spoke to 100 people in depth who were marketplace practitioners talking about their faith and their everyday life and what are the issues that arise for them. And a series of focus groups. And that has shaped, well, it's changed the course of my life, because everything that I have done since then in terms of my research and teaching has been shaped by my experience and reflections during that time. I'll come back to that in just a minute. I've been writing, teaching and researching, particularly from the point of view of churches supporting Christians at work. So that's been the main focus. I'm not a marketplace person. I've been most of my life a church leader. Very concerned now, though, to see that church works to resource Christians better for the everyday life in the world, and asking questions about how can that be. And so I've written a lot about that, and those resources are there for you. The other thing that may be of interest, and I don't know how this is in your context, but the other thing that I discovered is that in every major denomination in New Zealand, there have already historically been movements of lay renewal and lay resourcing that emphasised, as part of what they were doing, the resourcing of Christians for the everyday life in the workplace, in the world, as part of what they're doing. And one of the sad things is that this generation of Christians is often ignorant of their own history. And one of the things that we need to understand is what has happened in history, that these movements have grown and then died, and what's the resistance that they found themselves up against that undermined their ability to sustain themselves longer term, because the likelihood is that we're going to have to fight some of those same battles later down the track. And I think we're not aware enough of what that looks like. So I've been tracking the historical movements, one significant movement in each denomination in New Zealand, and at the same time I'm also looking at the contemporary renewal movements in the church in New Zealand. In New Zealand, that means the missional church movement, the emerging church movement, the new monasticism, means the Alpha program, the Redeemer Presbyterian Church and its influence in the kind of new Calvinist kind of influences in New Zealand, and a variety of other renewal movements, each of which contains elements that are interested in the theology of work. And I'm trying to see, in what ways are they interested? In what ways is this shaping the way that they're facing ministry? And how can we connect with these movements so that actually the renewal that's taking place in other areas of the church's life is also connected with what we're on about here? Because one of the sad things otherwise that happens is that we just continue to promote this disconnect between people who are involved in renewal amongst Christians in the marketplace and those who are working for the renewal and growth of the church. On the other hand, now, if there's not some connection there, and I think we can forge some connections, and because there are examples in each of these movements of people who are interested in what we're talking about in terms of marketplace theology and the theology of work, but often we're not well connected with those people. So, I've already said there are many important theological sources, and a lot of them are summarised. The historical ones are summarised in my thesis. I don't want to go back there, and Paul has already listed a whole lot of them separately elsewhere. The results of my practical survey work have also been summarised online if people want to see that, but I just want to summarise them for a moment. And then I want to go on just to talk about understanding the path towards integrating faith and life, because I think this is important about... I want you to understand why I've chosen the particular resources that I have, because I think each of us comes to these to explore these issues from different directions, and it's important to understand why. And soul purpose, or a sense of calling and vocation, how do we get it and how do we keep it? What is it the people we're trying to train need to know? These are the things that I discovered through the survey work that I did. Most people, when I first started to talk with them, thought I wanted to ask them about how effective they were being in evangelising their workmates. People from evangelical and Pentecostal church backgrounds primarily think God is concerned to have them involved in the marketplace for what that can mean in terms of evangelism and raising money for the church and its programs. And so the primary way that people make sense of their engagement in the marketplace in our kind of churches generally has been from the point of view of evangelism. At the same time, I discovered that almost everybody I talked to felt that they were very inadequate in this way and were very self-conscious about their lack of success in evangelism and suggested that I talk to somebody else about this rather than them. So two things I discovered. One is the patterns of evangelism, at least in New Zealand, that people have been introduced to, don't work for a lot of workplace Christians, and they feel really self-conscious at the best and guilty at the worst about this. So there is a job to be done there in terms of exploring evangelism. Most people did not think that their work mattered to God in itself, with one exception, and that is people involved in the helping professions. People who are involved in social work, as teachers, who work in hospitals, as doctors or nurses, these kind of people, and these are the professions to which many Christians are attracted, and I think it's because we affirm the worth of those who are involved in people helping work in a way that we don't affirm the worth of other kinds of work. And so people involved in the helping professions generally feel that there is some aspect of their work that they can call ministry and name and claim as being important to God, but people involved in most other professions don't. Because there's a serious job that needs to be done here about the theology of work that says our work matters to God in itself and not just in terms of the evangelistic fruit that it brings. And also the purpose of business in that. A lot of business people felt that the messages that the church communicated was that business is dodgy from God's point of view and suspect at best and dirty at worst. And so I think understanding business from God's perspective and the good purposes that business can fulfill. People also identify career and life planning concerns. How do I find where I fit in God's purposes? Many people were wrestling with ethical issues. Many people were juggling with competing time demands, family, church, work and community? How do I hold it all together? This raises a huge question about church. Is church primarily experienced by people as just another set of pressures in an already pressured life, and so it's also threatening to fragment their lives? Or is church part of what helps to add the glue that helps people to integrate lives and hold pressured lives together? It seems to me that if we're developing a significant theology of work, then and a Christian understanding of calling and vocation that's lived out through the whole of life and not just about finding a good job, then it should be part of the glue that helps people to hold whole lives together. Spirituality, almost all our patterns of prayer are retreating ones. What does prayer look like in the fast lane? How do we practice the presence of God in the midst of the busyness? Most people needed help. This was in the mid-90s. Most people had never heard at that point a sermon on work. Most people didn't know any songs that connected what happened in church with what happens at work. Most people had no mentors in this regard, no Christian mentors in this regard, and most people had no models for them of Christians doing the sort of things that they were doing. What I decided was that there are other people, workplace practitioners, who are better than me to do something about the question of how do I evangelise my workmates. Also, that it had to really be practitioners who are wrestling with kind of what does prayer look like in the midst of the busyness, that I would try and help to explore what was going on with these other issues here and work in partnership with others, for which is what I went to do. And so I developed courses around each of these things here, and out of those courses there are books that have come, and I've got copies of those books here if anybody wants to see what they look like. But that's why those are listed there. Another thing that affected the way that I look at these issues comes from David Miller's thesis, which some of you will have read, the book God at Work, which is an understanding that everybody comes at these issues from different directions. So actually you can't develop a course which is going to speak to everyone's needs. There's a variety of kind of needs that are reflected. And all you have to do is look at the Lausanne movement, if you're wondering about that. You've got the businesses mission group, you've got the marketplace ministries group, you've got the tent making group, you've got the micro enterprises group. Each of these is populated and led by people of very different ilks. They don't even understand each other. They often live with considerable tensions between them. The theologians aren't the same as business entrepreneurs, aren't the same as kind of missionaries who are trying to reinvent themselves as business people or people involved in micro-enterprise development. They are different skill sets, they are different understandings, and they are different journeys that people have been on. And so it is with us if we seek about resourcing people for life in the marketplace. What David Miller says, and this is not the Bible, this is just a way of looking at it. But I found something helpful in it in terms of there are four different ways he sees into integrating life and faith at work. He talks about the integration box. He says there are four doors, which in his experience, now there could be more than that. I'm not pleading for four doors, but I like the idea of there are different doors that people walk through in the process of seeking to live more integrated lives in terms of faith and work issues. And the first one, he says, is evangelism, his four E's. The second one is ethics. The third one is experience. The fourth one is enrichment. I think these two are plain, and I've already tagged these. By experience, he says, the experience of living in two different worlds with two different lives run according to two different sets of rules. So this is the dualism that people experience. I'm one person when I'm a Christian at church on Sunday. I live in a different world and operate according to a different set of rules on Monday. The fourth one, enrichment, relates more to trying to discover the spiritual resources that can help me to sustain me in a very challenging marketplace kind of world. So from my point of view, this is how I see these. This is the mission challenge that we find ourselves confronted with in the marketplace. This is the question of discipleship that has a real set of kingdom values at the centre of it. That kind of, it's a life of integrity that's faithful to the followers of Jesus and to the values that Jesus introduces us to. experiences. This is where the theology of work and the worldview questions come into play, of having a framework through which we can understand how faith and work are integrated. And this is the development of a spirituality that can sustain us with a sense not only of theoretical connectedness with God and work, but of practical connectedness with God, a sense of living in partnership with God in the course of our everyday work. I think, basically, David Miller would say, people enter often through one of those doors. They may go on to explore all of those doors. Certainly it means, as churches and as training institutions, we need to tackle all of those issues if we're going to develop a more fully rounded approach to the theology of work. Soul purpose, how do we get it and how do we keep it? I've spent a lot of my life working with students, trying to help them find where they fit in God's purposes, and then following them through as graduates into the marketplace, trying to see what is it they need in a continuing way to help sustain them. I'll just, I'm rushing through this, so I'll... You want? You pick up your one after lunch. Okay. There are five things that I think I have found that people need to know in order to sustain an ongoing sense of working in partnership with God in the course of their work. The first one is connection. To know that God is involved in our work and God's purposes are being worked out. But there are two sides to this. One is a theological understanding of the theology of work, to understand what is God doing in the world and how is my work connected with God's work. Do I have that sense of my work being caught up in God's big story? And we want every Christian to know that. But the other side of that is developing a spirituality, a patterns of prayer life, and ways of connecting with God that give us that ongoing sense of personal connection with God as well. So part of it's theological, part of it's spirituality, but connection, a sense of connection, is one really important component. The second important component is fit. To know ourselves and to feel that who we are fits the work that we are doing. I think what the New Testament teaches us is that God has shaped us. We are God's workmanship. We have been shaped in ways that reflect the kind of work that God has prepared us to do. So God has made us and gifted us so that we can go to work for him. Standing in front of my face. And so we need to know what that shape is. So part of that's about the gifts that God's given us. And we need to help people explore how they're gifted. But another really important part of that is ethical fit too. It's possible for someone to be very good at a job that they do very successfully, but still to find no fulfillment in it because they don't believe in the worth of the actual purposes for which that work is being carried out. In fact, it's possible to work in ways that you feel are subverting God's purposes, even though you're doing a job very well. And so it's really important that on the one hand that people become clearer about the gifts that God has given them, but also about the values that shape the work. If a person's going to have an ongoing sense of well-being in the kind of work that they're doing, then they need to know, one, that they fit in terms of the gifts that they're doing, and that they're living faithful to the values that they hold dear to. But they need help to clarify what those values are, what they look like. And often it's only when they hit the wall in terms of some ethical issues that they start to really clarify for themselves what those values are like, which is why it's really important that we're there for them at those moments. A third thing, I don't think any Christian over the long haul can feel that they're living faithful to kind of what God wants us to be and to do if we're not being of significant service to other people. This is not about self-actualisation. It's not about living in a way that works to serve us best. It's about working in a way that serves God and other people best and finding our fulfilment out of that service. That's where followers of Jesus, this is why it's really important that the church rediscovers its whole ministry of vocational guidance, because our whole approach to vocational guidance is very different to that of other secular organisations.
It's not about trying to find the perfect job. It's not about trying to find some way towards wealth for ourselves. It's not about self-fulfillment. It's actually about finding fulfillment in the service of God and other people in a way that fits how God has made us and the purposes that He created us to fulfill in service to Him and other people. So trying to help people discover what that means. And this is not all to be found in our job, necessarily. What we're talking about here, the work that God made us for, is our whole life's work. And this is really important to understand. Because I think it's very important. The theology of work can focus just on our particular job, and all we end up doing is what Western culture has already done, making an idol of job. I mean, I don't know how it is in Malaysia, but what I know is this. In New Zealand, when you go and greet someone, you say, "Hi, I'm Alistair," and they say who they are, and then you say, "What do you do?" Why do we ask that question? Well, it's because what you do defines you. Your status, the money that you make, where you live, the kind of car that you drive, this is what life's all about. It's what you do in terms of the paid job. Well, that's a lie from Christian's point of view. We find our identity in Jesus. We live out that identity through the work that we do, but it's in a very different place than what our culture teaches us. A couple of weeks ago, I spent time with my wife's part, Maori. We spent time, I would have had 100 conversations with people over 3 days from different Maori communities. And one of the interesting things was, only once in those 100 conversations did someone ask me what I did for a job or disclose what they did for a job. Because Maori people aren't interested in that. They say, "Where are you from? Who are your people?" And it's all about relationship. It's all about who you are and where you come from. And that's a whole different worldview. Now, I don't know how it is in Malaysia, and I know that you have you come from a number of different ethnic backgrounds yourself, even here in this country. But where we find identity is actually a really important thing, which is, and it's whole of life discipleship that we're talking about here. It's not just about the job we do. Now, Paul might want to take me to task about this. He doesn't like this word balance, I don't think. He thinks we made an idol of that too. And I agree with you, Paul, in as much as if we're talking about balance, as if that's some end that we work towards that has some kind of special significance on its own, that's not what God wants us on about. But if we talk about what enables us to sustain discipleship over the long term while we juggle competing time demands, then I think there's something important in that for us. Balance here is about maintaining enough balance in the whole of life for health and sustainability. I think God wants us to be healthy enough to live sustainable lives as disciples of Jesus. And that means juggling all the time competing time demands. And at different stages of life, we find ourselves juggling different competing time demands, and we have to renegotiate that balance. And I think people need help to understand how do we live better balanced lives. Not because we want to make a virtue of balance in itself, but because it's important for sustainability that we may learn to understand what balance looks like from God's point of view. And the last one is this, is encouragement. I was surprised how many people I talked to didn't talk to anybody else close at hand about their work, didn't have anybody who explicitly prayed for them, lacked encouragement from other members of the Christian community in terms of affirming the work that they did and seeking to support them in the work that they did. I think God intends that the church would be that community of committed companions who help to sustain us and encourage us and guide us in our work. The church often doesn't operate like that, and we need to rediscover the church's ministry of vocational guidance, because vocation was a church word and vocational guidance was a ministry of the church that we've lost, or at least that we reduced so it only became applied to those people that we're trying to guide into leadership of the church, and not to vocational guidance for the whole people of God in order that the whole church might be mobilised to minister to the whole world. So behind that list of resources that I've given you is this kind of understanding here of the importance of these elements. And I'm not going to go through this list, don't worry, in great detail now. I just thought that each of us, in some ways, it disturbs me if I just get together and I plunder all of Paul's resources and I end up teaching all Paul's stuff, but I don't live in Paul's context, and I haven't really taken time to explore what's really needed here for these people that I'm called to work with, then something's missing. And so I think I've got some sort of a fix on what people in the context I live in are saying and some of the needs that exist there. I don't presume to know what are really important for the people in your context. I'd be surprised if a lot of the things didn't overlap, but I'd also be really surprised and thought you hadn't done your homework enough if you didn't also have some quite unique perspectives on the theology of work coming from your particular context. And so what I would just encourage you to do is you have a look at what is available. Out of the stuff that I've listed here, I've encouraged you to look at the stuff that Paul's done. I use a lot of the resources that Paul also uses. I've said there are also a number of resources referred to in the bibliography by Paul Barnett that's on Will Messenger's online resources. What I'll do is I'll give Philip a link to where you can get those Will Messenger's resources and download those for yourself. You'll find on that, amongst them, is a copy of my thesis as well as a number of other things. A more elaborate statement of some of the resources I use is on the website that I run, which is called faithatwork.org.nz, and on the left hand side in the second paragraph you'll see the address for that website if you're interested. If you're looking at older resources and you're just not quite sure which ones are of worth, you can always have a look at the Marketplace Annotated Bibliography by Pete Hammond and Paul Stevens and Todd Svano, because that's quite a helpful, it's got very abridged but kind of annotated reviews of each of the books there, gives you some sense of what they're about. And all I've provided here is an abridged list of the resources that I most often use these days in my teaching and preaching and training. And there's a mixture here. Most of these aren't particularly heavy kind of academic work, so that they can be used at a popular level as well. It's not. If you want the heavier academic works, you can have a look at my thesis to try and find where they are. The other thing that I've listed down there, it is amazing now how many resources there are that are available on the internet. So I've just written down some websites and a whole lot of papers that are available. The papers that are listed there are the ones also that describe the research work that I've done. I'm happy to talk further with you about this. But I think there are a ton of resources that are out there. Boy, when I started on this journey, and Paul, you started a long time before me, and it would have been meagre pickings when you started probably, but it felt like pretty meagre pickings when I started. If I was starting off again, I wouldn't write any of the books that I've written now, because there are other people who have written books in those areas since then. I think probably what, I don't know about you Paul, but I suspect you're probably in the same situation as me. What concerned me when I started out looking at these, there were quite a number of books that were written at an academic level about the theology of work. There were also quite a lot of other books, mostly North American, that were written at a popular level. The popular level books were largely anecdotal, people telling stories about their experience of life in the workplace, but with very little biblical content and very little theological reflection. I think what I've felt has motivated me in terms of this is, how can we up the biblical content and the theological reflection at a popular level? Because that's been the real dearth of resources in that level there. Would that be similar for you? And so I still think that that's the challenge for us. How do we up the biblical content and theological reflection, but still at a popular level, so that it's not too remote in the academic world for people to access, but it's not just anecdotes, it's more than just people telling stories. Not that I want to dismiss the significance of telling stories. I teach contextual theology. I believe in the importance of storytelling, but I also believe in the importance of biblical foundations and theological reflection that goes alongside of that storytelling too. It's lunchtime. Thanks very much for bearing with us with this, and we'll continue after lunch.
It's about lunchtime.